welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. Revenue Rocket is the premier M&A advisor and growth strategy advisor to IT services companies. With me today are my partners, Matt Lockhart and Ryan Burnett. Welcome, guys.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Good to be here, grinding away in the dog days of summer. Ryan, what's going on today?
Well, if you're like a lot of people, the fourth can be a time for just friends and family. And one of the things when you get people together is hopefully you're planning for the future and what it looks like to either run a company or perhaps run your life after a company. And today I really want to talk about that is, you know, what does life look like after the sale? Like, what does kind of no one tell you? And what should you expect as a business owner once a check's been signed, a deal's closed, everyone's taking a breath, and kind of look at what life is next? And we worked with a lot of founders and a lot of people who have gone through this. And Mike, I know you've talked to us, talked about this a lot. Why don't you get us started? You know, what happens after that? Kind of you sold your business. Now what?
Well, you know, as oftentimes things are, they're nuanced. And the answer is it depends. It depends a lot about whether you've joined with a capital partner and what we like to call sell-in, where you still own equity in the business. You're moving forward together to build a much bigger business for the quote-unquote second bite at the apple. You're going to be part of that new enterprise, whether you're a platform or a tuck-in. And you're going to play a critical role for a period of years. That sort of, you know, plan post-close is sort of one path. And, you know, I don't want to say it's easier, but it's certainly fairly defined, right? You're going to do a lot of vetting of each other pre-close, and you're going to talk about your plans, your growth plans together. And then you're going to begin to execute on those once you close your, what really is a recapitalization of your business for a further growth and profit. And generally, that means you're selling a majority of your equity and keeping a minority position and working together with your capital partner to scale it and grow it and build value for another exit down the road. The other, you know, exit is what we'll call selling out. Selling out is much more about transitioning out and away from the business at some logical point. And that one can be much tougher, because oftentimes people take a call from a firm like Revenue Rocket about a potential acquirer being interested in their business. And we move down a path together, and, you know, ultimately it looks like it's an interesting opportunity. And all along, that seller, in this case, it would be someone who's built a great business looking to sell, is to think about what's next. And what's next needs to be well thought out and planned ahead of time, or you're going to be miserable. From my own experience, having done this, you know, three times, and certainly we've advised hundreds of owners about these kinds of things over the last 25 years. Planning about the future is super critical. And without a solid plan in place, you know, I often say this, you know, tongue in cheek, without a roadmap, any road will get you there. You know, it's going to be not a good situation mentally for you or from a contentment perspective. You know, everybody thinks, you know, you get a big check, you just sold your business, life should be going swimmingly. That's not always the case. They say money can't buy you happiness. And I think in this case, it's certainly a good example of that.
Yeah, thanks for getting us started here, Mike. Matt, you've worked with a lot of founders who have sold their business and some selling in. When someone is selling in, oftentimes the CEO goes from position of really being the person. What does it happen, or what do you see happens to people who in that selling in take a different role? And how should someone prepare for a different role in a new company?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, I think the first thing is recognizing that you aren't the quote unquote man anymore, i.e. you don't have the final, you know, sort of veto. And any good leader knows that, they're hopefully enabling their team to be making, you know, lots of decisions. But at the end of the day, there's some things that are up to you as the founder and the owner in the business. And, you know, when you are selling in and you found that partner, and maybe it's a capital partner, maybe it's a strategic, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's why one of those things that you really do need to do is understand that you're going to need to work decisions through other people. The right capital partner and or the right strategic partner obviously is going to recognize that you've got great skills, that you've built a great business, that you've led a great team. But you're going to need to understand that sometimes other people may think differently and ultimately be comfortable with, you know, having a boss again. And I think it's really a bit of soul searching that needs to go on, because one of the things that you do see is sometimes people who are, you know, past business owners, and they say, "Oh, well, sure, this is going to be great." And then all of a sudden there's a contentious decision that needs to be made and it doesn't go your way. And how do you react to that? And I think that sort of thinking through that scenario is one of the key pieces is really important. And then secondly, if you go, "No, I can understand. I am cashing some chips and we all have a vested interest, and so the incentives are aligned, and, you know, let's go." Well, then make sure that you're finding that right partner that you can work with, right? And we've talked about that and talked about the selling in process. Culturally, it has to align. Strategically, it has to align. But then personally, right? And personal working styles and you know, we used to say, "Geez, could I go have a beer with that guy?" And I think that that's really critical too, after you get over the hump of saying, "Yep, I'm cool having a boss."
Yeah, it's a new chapter, and when you have that new chapter, being part of that new team is always going to be something different. Change is always hard, and this is a big part of change. Mike, I'm curious, have you ever seen cases where the integration didn't kind of match what was promised, and were there maybe in some red flags in the deal process that may have signaled that there could have been some issues post-close?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've seen that. You know, I think when we see it, we try to flag it, let people know that there are some, and it usually comes from cultural differences. When I say cultural differences, I don't mean racial differences. I mean the way that people think about the culture, customer care philosophy, employee care philosophy, how they manage and run the business, how they market, how they contemplate the human experience and the interactions with others. All that really, really matters. And the tone in any given business, entrepreneurial business, is really set by the leadership. And in most cases, in tech services companies, by the owner or owners of that business. And they set a tone that sort of attracts similar and like-minded employees and staff and partners to work with them. And when there's dissonance in those things, there's a lot of chaff that can get introduced into a relationship when you just think differently about how people should be treated, how they should be managed, how they should work together or could work together, or how you manage customer relationships and the work that you do for those customers. So, you know, you've heard us talk about deals have to hold together strategically, culturally, and financially. Culture oftentimes is overlooked. It's part of why we have a culture scoring rubric that we use in all of our deals, and an industrial psychologist on staff that helps us manage and vet cultural fit and interaction. Because if there's going to be a situation where people don't line up post-close or have issues post-close, Our experience is it happens when there is a cultural mismatch. There's a lot of energy and effort that goes into financial and legal due diligence. And there's a lot of advisors around a transaction that help get that right. And you certainly wouldn't contemplate a transaction if you hadn't fully vetted the strategic fit, you know, where the 1+1=3, where you're better together than apart. Those things kind of take care of themselves. Where you hit bumps in the road post-transaction that can really create a lot of heartburn are when you have cultural, what I call cultural dissonance or mismatch. And taking the time to get that right will certainly help you be a much happier person post-close, particularly if you're going to be leading or part of the leadership team in that new entity.
Oh, thanks for getting us going there, Mike. You know, Mike, you mentioned earlier that if you're going to be exiting the business and you're just no longer a part of the ongoing entity, that you have to have a plan who's for kind of what's next in life. Matt or Mike, feel free to jump in here. How do you help clients think about their next chapter? Kind of the wire transfers happen. How do you get them thinking, you know, what should be next? Is it sometimes just a big sigh of relief, like we just climbed the mountain, we got to the apex, and now I can see clearly now. And then you find out, hey, what's next? So what advice do you give, or how do you get founders to look and be their happiest post-exit? What advice can you give them before that transaction closes? Matt, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I've been through it, and it came, you know, relatively quick. And the process, you know, even though we coach people, the process of selling your business is, 6 to 12 month process, depending, right, on a number of factors. If you need some work on readiness and the like, but that time goes pretty quickly. And I think that you've got to have, in my case, I knew I wasn't going to be selling in, and I certainly knew I wasn't going to be retiring, right? So it was exploring what are the things that I really enjoyed, right? You know, who are the people that I enjoy? What are the things, you know, what is it that you want to do next? Do you want to be in a completely different industry? Do you want to stay in the same industry if you're continuing to work? I mean, it is just putting the time towards it, I think, is the number one deal, which is hard when you're in the process of selling your company, right? So, you know, some of the things that I did was is I got away from it all. I think that that's a common deal where at some point in the process before the wire hits, you've been able to, you know, get away. Personally, I believe that it helps to get overseas as well, because then you're completely out of your own environment and you got some good think time, right? You got some good soak time. Obviously, working with your peer groups, working with your friends, working with your family, collaborating, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, and this is a great piece of advice that I got is also, you know, plan something fun, plan a celebration that is going to happen after a deal closes. If you've been thinking about, you know, sort of treating yourself in a certain way, you can think about that as well. Because that idea of celebrating what you've done, you've gotten to the mountaintop, like you say, Ryan, and you've achieved that goal, well, that should be rewarded, right? And make it a distinct reward that is something that you've wanted to do. Because that helps to put a cap on that old chapter. And when you put a cap on that old chapter, that also kind of helps get your mind right about you're starting a new chapter in the book. And so it's good to have that sort of distinct closure. So a number of different thoughts. But in, you know, A, work with people, talk about it, get some think time, be able to get away. And it doesn't have to be a plan for forever. It could be, hey, you know what? I'm going to take some time to figure it out and figure out what my next step is. And it's going to be this amount of time. And here's the steps that I'm going to take to figure that out. So there's a lot of different paths. As a matter of fact, everyone is going to have their own path. But think about the plan to build the plan.
Yeah, I think it's great advice. And you have to start thinking about it early. And keep in mind, your employees are also going through a bit. I've been a part of a number of transactions where I've been an employee that has gone through it. And sometimes just thinking what you're going to do in the future of the company can be really exciting. It can also be frightful. Sometimes you get handed a termination letter and a hiring letter in the same day if it's an asset sale. Kind of emotionally, you're preparing yourself for that. And I think founders have to do a little bit of pre-planning for understanding how that's going to work too, to make sure they're retained and keeping their best staff too. So a lot of good ideas just to plan ahead. Think about what you want to do, set that goal. I really like that idea of setting that kind of the reward once you get there. Mike, switching gears a little bit, and this can happen both in a company where you're selling in. I think it's more prevalent, but we do certainly see it in selling out too. But how do you start to treat an earnout and even mentally? After the close, like you, oftentimes, you know, most deals in our space will have a component that has cash at close, but it's, you know, it's pretty common to see 30-ish% more or less kind of fall to an earnout. And I'm just curious, like emotionally, how are and really tactically, how should a founder start to think about that earnout? And especially if maybe they are on a 6-month consulting agreement and maybe they have a 2-year tail, how do you start to think about keeping the business going forward? Is that going concern and hitting those earnouts?
Well, I think it's important to note that oftentimes owners forget about this. Today they have 100% of the risk. Granted, they have 100% of the control, but they have 100% of the risk and reward. And to some extent, you know, all of their income is tied to an earnout now, right? They have a great year, they'll probably do well, and they have a crappy year, they're not going to do well. So they need to, you know, when you do a transaction, particularly one, whether it's a recap or you sell the whole business or whatever, that includes an earnout or sometimes we use the term gain share portion, you're de-risking by taking a payment up front, right? This is a portion that gives the seller, the buyer comfort that you're going to support that business going forward to achieve its forecast. Preferably, you want to be there to do that. But if not, and say you have part of it, you're going to your point, your example, Ryan, you're going to be there for a 6-month consulting contract, and then you're not going to be around. You're going to want to make sure that the team that's there to execute against the business plan and in general the plan itself is vetted and funded so that you can ensure that you'll get your earnout. Now, fascinatingly enough, most earnouts, a vast majority of earnouts, with this caveat, if they're structured properly, get paid out. I think I've seen some stats that say 86%+ of earnouts get paid out at or above their index value. So you can say, yeah, it's risky. Sure, it's risky, but it's only about 14% more risky than taking a cash payment or a seller note. So given that, what you want to do to mitigate that risk, I'll cross that 14% chance it won't get paid out, is to make sure that the team and the plan and the funding is there to make the pull the levers to get to your earnout. And if you can have influence on that, either by sticking around as an employee or contractor or sitting on a board or being in a position of influence and advice, or even just being available for a phone call when they run into a challenge, you want to be able to do that because obviously you have a financial incentive to do so.
And yeah, I think that it's a great point in you have to keep engaged and make sure this is successful. And not all deals are successful. And sometimes we have seen founders that have bought businesses back. We work hard to make sure that when we look at these type of arrangements, that they are non-fungible, are to places that everyone can agree on and ultimately work together to achieve those goals. So I think that's important to say. This has been an interesting topic to me. I guess the last question I have for really both of you is there one thing that no one tells you about life after selling your business? Matt, why don't you get us started? And Mike, we'll let you clean up after that.
It's an interesting question. Well, I think that maybe one of the things that came as just sort of an interesting deal for me, and Mike, I don't know if you experienced it, you're working so closely with people, and that can be customers, partners, and then obviously your employees. And some of these relationships are truly lifelong relationships, and they become great friendships. And because they're great friendships, those will continue. But I think one of the things that nobody told me was, once you're out of that business and you've sold that business and you're not the boss or a partner anymore, then there's other people that just, you don't have that relationship like you had before. So maybe one of the things is many of your relationships will change, evolve, and in some cases, disappear. And that's okay, right? Because those were business relationships that, served that purpose. So maybe that's one of the things that that I didn't have a whole lot of insight into previously.
Yeah, I would echo that, Matt. I would say certainly things change, relationships change, times change. I think that's just a given no matter what. But certainly when you have these types of what I think are fairly dramatic changes in business ownership and leadership, then your whole world tends to change. And what's fascinating to me, I'll just highlight a couple things, conversations I had with people in the last 2 days, one of which I was talking with an owner of a business who was a young guy and not contemplating an exit really in the business, but came to the realization, or even a recap, but came to the realization that maybe he should consider it, built a very successful business, because his real goal is to build a material family office to be able to do other investing and ultimately do philanthropic giving. And this is a tool for him to do that. If he should recap his business, take some chips off the table, invest that, get to a second, quote unquote, second bite at the apple, invest that, he can get to his goals around building his family office. He can do it in his lifetime and still be able to achieve what he's trying to build. And that's having a plan, right? That's a purposeful plan for which to look at saying, hey, I'd never contemplated, looking at a recap or a sale of my business, but maybe I should, because my real goal is to build this family office to be a platform for growth and philanthropy. And so, that's one example. Another was a guy I talked to today, actually, who sold two businesses, very successful IT services businesses, and basically recharged his battery, sitting on the sidelines for a few years, and decided to during the pandemic because they couldn't pursue much other than sit at home and you know, look out the window, to start another business with his former partners. So they did, as a way to kind of stay busy and to put some focus on their energy and growth. And, you know, now it's created a successful going concern through that sort of catalyst, right? And we do see a lot of entrepreneurs that have a catalyst that after they do a transaction, you know, they get back in. You know, for myself, that's happened 3 times already before starting Revenue Rocket. So, you know, there's certainly varying levels of success you have with different business enterprises. And you may feel, you know, just because you're either exiting and selling out or even after you sell in and ultimately exit, that you still have more to give and contribute and learn. I'd emphasize a learn. And that you want to be in another enterprise. And most of those individuals start another company. You have another client who had a very successful exit and built a new company after that exit, and is growing through acquiring other IT services companies, starting a whole new sort of, you know, passion and scratching that itch as part of, I guess, what I would call his family office investment paradigm. And so it's more often than not an exit where you leave the business becomes a rebirth almost of scratching your entrepreneurial itch that we've seen is much, much more common than people of really any age just sort of sailing off into the sunset to, you know, retire or whatever. Now, with that said, we've certainly seen people we've helped exit their businesses and, you know, at 35 or 40 years old, they retire. They're pursuing spending time with family and hobbies and are, you know, very interested in living a very full life, you know, not working or running a business. Now, do I think that at some point, some of those people specifically, I sort of go through my mental Rolodex, do I think that they will be doing something or investing in something where they participate more fully? I suspect they will, because for this point in their life, this really works well. And to Matt's point, you know, it's not forever. It's not like you have to say, well, I'm exiting my business and, you know, now I got to play golf every day, you know, much as that might sound good to some of us golfers and less good to us hacker golfers. You just don't know what the future opportunities might be or ideas you have or passions you might, you know, discover or build. And I guess I would articulate and maybe share that you should be open to following some of those roads to the unknown, you know, unknown destiny when they present themselves. And, you know, certainly be thoughtful about what you're going to do post-deal. But, you know, new opportunities and things will present themselves that, you know, might just sound interesting, and who knows, maybe you'll jump in with both feet and find a new passion.
Yeah, thanks, Mike and Matt. I really appreciate the insight here. It's a really exciting time when you do close that, and you get that check, you get an opportunity to be part of something bigger or figure out kind of your next steps. What I heard today, the most important thing is just to have a plan. And make sure that when you're thinking about an exit, it's not you're not just wrapped up in selling the company, but you're looking at what is going to be that next step, and be able to really look at something really exciting. So, Mike, Matt, again, thank you so much for the topic today. Mike, I'll turn it over to you for any closing thoughts and then wrap up.
Yeah, sure thing. So I think, I guess my single biggest piece of advice is to, as hard as it is to look in the crystal ball and contemplate the future, you need to put some cycles into thinking about it, particularly if you're selling out. Because idle time for entrepreneurs that have been in, you know, has moved pretty quickly. You need to do that to be able to build a company. You need to be pretty nimble and smart and flexible and a learning being is probably the best way I would put it. Means that, you know, there's always a lot going on, and usually time is your most valuable commodity. when time becomes more available, you know, you have to understand what you're going to do with that and whether you're going to deploy that time in volunteer work and philanthropy or starting a new company or participating in some way in a board or other areas of the business or simply just enjoying your time with family and friends. Having thoughts around that is really, really important. And having clarity about where that might go and sort of narrowing the field of opportunity and options will serve you really, really well. And I would say, you know, to some extent, that same advice applies if you're selling in. The key to understand is what is your secret sauce that you bring to a business? What is your most effective superpower, if you want to use that as an example, to bring to a new business? And how do you play a role in that quickly expanding business that leverages that superpower? I think if you do that, you'll be super happy and you can contribute at a very high level and certainly will be there to ride out a very successful second bite at the apple when that time comes. And so with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks again, and make it a great week.